Hello and welcome to The Scoop, a provincial newscast and podcast with stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortes Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on The Scoop, TransLink, the transportation agency of Metro Vancouver, recently announced a collaboration with the Patina Brewing Company out of Port Coquitlam to diversify TransLink's funding model. Danny Nesvarandi at CJSF in Burnaby has more. The city of Nanaimo is looking to ban the sale of invasive plants within city limits, Lauren McKenzie at CHLY Nanaimo reports. And the Smithers Brewing Company has been awarded Best Brewery in Canada. Pam Hassan at CACK News tells us more. I'm Dan Messick, and you're listening to The Scoop.
This is Danny Nesvarandi, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. TransLink, the transportation agency of Metro Vancouver, recently announced a collaboration with a local business in Port Coquitlam, BC. This local business is Patina Brewing, a brewing company that has partnered with TransLink to release a public transit-themed craft beer, aptly titled the Platform Pilsner. A novel collaboration, but one that TransLink hopes is able to inspire other unique collaborations with local businesses throughout Metro Vancouver. To learn more about why TransLink decided on this collaboration with Patina Brewing, we spoke with John Jang, TransLink's media relations advisor. When we asked why TransLink decided to go into this direction, here's what he had to say.
It's a really, really good question. So first of all, you know, TransLink as an organization, we're always trying to think of new ways, creative ways to generate a little bit of revenue that doesn't involve us having to increase the fares for customers. And with that in mind, our CPMP team, which is our corporate partnerships and program team, they essentially are tasked with coming up with creative ways to find other organizations, businesses, or opportunities to find these revenue streams. As another example, I'll mention that we introduced Amazon lockers on TransLink SkyTrain stations and transit hubs a couple of years back, again, to also realize that customers could use this as a benefit. When you're working and going to school, you want to pick up a package along the way home. It's really convenient to do it right at your SkyTrain station or transit hub. So they kind of came to us and said, hey, we have this idea of a partnership with Patina, and we think it'd be a really great way to do it. And I just immediately thought, well, that seems like an excellent idea. Let's see what we can do. And so we were able to partner with Patina and license the intellectual property for TransLink and kind of work together to create the Platform Pilsner. It's, I think, the first of its kind program, not just in Canada, but possibly in North America, when you think about a transit agency doing something like this. So we were really proud of the fact that it's kind of progressive. And come on, let's be real. Metro Vancouver is known for a lot of different things, including a very strong craft beer scene.
Later on, we asked him if this collaboration opens the door for other TransLink-themed products, whether that be a TransLink sneaker or any other array of TransLink food items or specialty drinks, like the one that's seen in this collaboration with Patina Brewing.
You know what? I guess never say never. I don't know that anything is in the works for a TransLink sneaker, though that would be a pretty cool idea. Obviously, if a sneakerhead is listening right now, I'm sure they'd love that. But for us, again, it's just trying to find creative ways to generate a little bit of that revenue. So the Amazon partnership with the lockers, again, being a really good example of us doing something like that. Obviously, it's not like a TransLink locker. It's still an Amazon branded locker. Amazon is the one that provides those lockers. We just give them the space and the lease to do it. But it gives us a little bit of money where if we hadn't done that partnership, we wouldn't be getting that money. And all of that money still goes to support and fund operational services across Metro Vancouver. So, you know, I think if you've got other brilliant ideas like TransLink sneakers, TransLink snacks, food, nothing is off the table as long as it makes sense for us as an organization, for our customers, and also for the organizations that we'd be partnering with.
We then went on to ask if this project came from a desire from TransLink to diversify its revenue streams.
Yeah, I think it 100% was. Our CP&P team, you know, their task is to be creative and think outside the box and find ways to generate that revenue. But all of that is still because we need to find ways to make sure that our operating funding is strong and flush. Now, obviously, a large bulk of that still comes through partnerships and funding that we receive from government partners. And we've got many different teams that are constantly working with partners at every level of government to get that kind of funding so that we don't have to worry about, you know, reducing services or anything of that nature. Thankfully, our 2025 investment plan was secured this year, where we can feel pretty good about it over the next couple of years. But trying to find new ways to get that revenue, TransLink, again, is getting into real estate development, right? So that's another creative way that we're doing this and looking at other transit agencies around the world that have done this and looking at it and thinking that's a model that we could emulate here in Metro Vancouver. So it's basically the task of having to come up with all these different creative ways to generate a little bit of revenue. And I would say, like, there's never too little. Like, any bit that we can get through programs like the collaboration with Patina Brewing, it just goes to help everyone, whether it's us having to keep the services or the customers who depend on having those services every single day.
We then discussed whether TransLink hopes that this collaboration inspires other public transit providers to collaborate with local businesses in their communities.
Yeah, you know, I can't say with certainty that other transit agencies will exactly follow suit, but they might at least be inspired by, like, the model, like allowing transit agencies to permit the use of their intellectual property and working with local businesses. It doesn't necessarily have to be craft beer. It might not even be beer at all. It might be other products. I don't know for certain, but I do think that the transit industry is a very tight-knit community. And so what happens in Metro Vancouver with TransLink, for example, is definitely viewed and observed by transit agencies, not just across Canada, but across North America and around the world. And so we know that if there are conversations happening, maybe somebody picks up a phone or writes an email and reaches out to someone at TransLink and says, hey, like, tell us a little bit more about how you guys got into this, because we're thinking about doing it in, like, I don't know, Berlin, or maybe in some places in Hong Kong. Like, we don't know. But I hope we have had that impact with this project. We do know that it's progressive. We know that it's raised a lot of eyebrows, not just from people living in Metro Vancouver, but across the country. And I think that's what makes this such a unique story for TransLink. We didn't just do this because we wanted to get our names out there for the purpose of being, like, the first of its kind. We also wanted to support a local business with Patina, a great local community brewery in Port Coquitlam. And especially now, during a time where obviously a lot of things are happening politically, economic uncertainty is felt by every Canadian right now. And so that also played a big role into it too. So if other organizations and other agencies want to kind of follow the TransLink model here, we hope they do so with the mindset of wanting to support their local communities as well.
Once again, that was our conversation with John Jang, the media relations advisor for TransLink, on the company's new collaboration with Patina Brewing for the Platform Pilsner. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby.
This is a seat to our news update. As invasive species cause harm to native ecosystems around the world, on a local level, the city of Nanaimo is looking at banning the sale and distribution of certain invasive species. At a Governance and Priorities Committee meeting on Monday, June 23rd, recommendations were made that City Council direct staff to draft a bylaw prohibiting the sale and distribution within city limits of certain species identified by the Invasive Plant Council of BC. This comes as a staff report found that several invasive plants, such as Scotch broom, Daphne, English ivy, and Himalayan blackberry, grow rapidly in the city, impacting native ecosystems. Hunter Jarrett, a local ecological restoration consultant, spoke with CHY about the importance of curbing the spread of invasive species in the community. Jarrett says invasive plants have taken over the many parts of Nanaimo's great outdoors. During his over-the-phone interview, he could even spot several different invasives from his parked car.
I'm actually looking at quite a few. So there's, I'm looking at Queen Anne's Lace, Common Tansy, Scotch Broom.
Jarrett says while invasive species come into different communities in different ways, a new bylaw banning the sale and distribution of the plants will help.
You know, we are managing invasive species. They are present here. They are spreading. And them being commercially available is just one source of introduction. But it, you know, the horticultural trade in general is generally where all of these new invasive species are coming from. And so, well, it won't address every single invasive species. There's kind of a set list that that we're able to regulate. It's a great start.
Along with drafting a new bylaw, the committee recommended that council direct staff to work with local garden retailers and the community to organize public awareness campaigns about native and non-invasive alternatives and how to properly dispose of invasive plant waste. Public awareness around invasive plants, Jarrett says, is another huge key in stopping the introduction of invasive plants into different ecosystems.
There's these volunteer opt-in programs where organizations, retailers, nurseries can opt in to say, hey, we're not going to sell or distribute invasive species, but they only work if those businesses actually opt in to those programs. And as somebody who's done that work and, you know, engaged with the community and have heard from many people who have talked to managers and owners of various establishments, it's clear that we're not getting enough buy-in. So this is going to be a huge piece that helps fill in that gap.
Jarrett says stores may still be selling invasive plants because they have customers wanting to buy the plants, not knowing the impacts it could have on local ecosystems.
Some nurseries, you know, there's people buying them, and so it's a product. They're going to have it available. If they're legally allowed to do it, there's money to be made, and that's kind of the end for that.
Along with plants, he also mentioned seed mixes that are also sold in stores where the seed mixes might feature seeds from invasive plants. He gives examples of foxgloves and bachelor's bun as invasives commonly found in seed mixes. Councillor Hillary Ismere originally brought up the idea for the bylaw back in March of this year.
I was participating in a lot of work parties to remove invasive plants, and I was also hearing from people, both volunteers and people who work as experts in the invasive species removal business, and they were expressing, you know, that so much time and money is being put into trying to remove invasives and fighting this at the ground level. But what's really needed is to also go upstream and to stop these invasive plants from getting into the environment in the first place.
She says many of the work parties would involve the removal of English ivy, Daphne, and Scotch broom.
So the English ivy is climbing up trees and choking them out, and the spurge laurel or Daphne is covering the ground and blocking out the sunlight and killing off our native species on the ground floor of the forest.
She says banning the sale and distribution of invasive plants is one important tool for the city to have to help slow the growth of invasives. She adds she is in favor of seeing the province step in and do a province-wide ban of the sale of the plants.
We can only do so much as a municipal government, but I do think it's important for us to lead the way and to show that we're on board by doing what we can locally, but it's always about also pressuring the province to step up and do their part, because these invasive plants don't understand municipal boundaries. And so really we need a provincial approach to these things.
James Grant is the owner of Birdie and Bee's Garden, located on Bowen Road. He thinks having a bylaw banning invasive species from plant nurseries and stores is a great idea.
It's definitely a problem that needs to be taken into consideration, and it's something that we take into consideration already in our buying. So it's not something that we bring in by and large. We try and avoid the invasive species whenever possible.
Graham says it's important for local plant sellers to watch what they are bringing into the community.
Of course, just being in the industry, there is a knowledge base that you're expected to have. It's, you know, we're introducing things into the environment, so we're aware of what's available in the marketplace and what to avoid, not just because of the BC Species Council, but from being active nature lovers too, so.
Birdie and Bee's Garden opened in March of this year, and Graham says they made the conscious decision when they first opened to avoid buying invasive species in the first place.
That you have to make a conscious effort not to bring in, even though people are asking for them. Things that particularly come into mind, things like periwinkle, things like ivy, those are really detrimental to our environment. They escape captivity very easily. So it's a conscious decision not to bring those in and to allow them for a selection in the first place.
So while a ban wouldn't have a large impact on their store, Graham says change will be good for the industry And plant shop owners and customers need to make more conscious decisions about the plants they buy and grow. For CHUI News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This is CICK News. Today on CICK News, Smithers Brewing Company, only 7 years old this year, was awarded Canadian Brewery of the Year at the Canadian Brewing Awards in Vancouver last week, where the very best in craft breweries across the country gather to have their beer judged by a panel of industry experts. This year's competition featured more than 1,600 entries from nearly 270 breweries spanning 50 categories from traditional English ale to spicier offerings like chili beer. Smithers Brewing Company won bronze in the Irish Stout category, silvers in the Creative, Scotch Ale, and Berliner Weiss and Goza category, and two golds came home to Smithers in the Irish Red as well as English Mild and Brown Ale category. Here's Smithers Brewing Company's head brewer, Cam McKeegan, talking to CICK News last Tuesday.
We didn't figure out, like, until at the gala when the awards were being doled out, one of the organizers pulled me aside and he's like, "Have you figured it out yet?" I'm like, "No, figured what out?" And, "Brewery of the Year, do you have a speech ready?" I'm like, "Do I have a what?" My name's Cam McKeegan. I am the head brewer and part owner of Smithers Brewing Company.
Okay, Canadian Brewery of the Year. What do you think that this does for, one, the brewery, and then two, for Smithers to bring home a title like that?
I mean, for the brewery, it kind of puts us on the craft beer map. Us and a lot of our friends up here are often overlooked in the craft beer scene just because we're so damn hard to get to.
Yeah.
So it does kind of, like, at the very least, there are a lot of people around Canada right now and in BC, you know, looking at Google Maps and being like, "Oh, that's where Smithers is." But I don't know, just kind of like, both for the town and for the brewery, it sort of just puts us on the map. And for the town, it does it about a week after Tony Hawk was here. So it's just like, all of a sudden, people are not only going to be Googling where is Smithers, but they're like, "What are they doing up there?"
How likely did you think it was going to be that you were going to, was it six?
It was six medals. And the Brewery of the Year is just, like, it goes to the brewery that brings home the most individual medals. So,
yeah.
Like, we didn't know we'd won six. So we didn't go into it kind of like, "Oh, yeah, I think we got this in the bag." The Canadian Brewing Awards, they kind of give you the nod. And they're sort of like, "Hey, it would be a good idea for you to attend. And also, if you could bring a couple of these beers," and they list the beers, mm-hmm. "it would be, like, you know, it would be beneficial. We'd really appreciate it if you could bring some of these beers for us all to drink." And so that kind of tells you that, like, those beers have won awards, but they kind of didn't give us much more than that. We didn't figure out, like, until at the gala when the awards were being doled out, one of the organizers pulled me aside and he's like, "Have you figured it out yet?" I'm like, "No, figured what out?" And, "Brewery of the Year, do you have a speech ready?" I'm like, "Do I have a what?" He's like, "Oh, well, we're going to announce it in like 20 minutes. So, like, you better start working on your speech."
So, the beers that you won for, were they mostly like traditional styles? What's the secret to crafting something beautifully that a lot of people know what it tastes like and what it should taste like?
I mean, the thing with those beers is it kind of isn't a secret. Like, a handful of those styles have been around for well over a century, some of them longer than that. And they're recipes of the big breweries that have, like, that are famous for producing those styles are readily available on the internet. And it's more just kind of technique and process and, you know, sourcing the ingredients from the places where, you know, like, that the beer is from. Like, our Irish Red and our Irish Stout both won medals in this recent one, and we bring in malt from the British Isles, we bring in hops from the British Isles, right? And we adjust our water profile to be more or less like, I use cork water. I don't use Dublin water. Cork, for those of you who aren't sure, Cork is a county in Ireland, as well as a city in Ireland. I don't put actual corks in the water. But it is just like taking the time, doing the research, getting the fine details right, and going through enough of the research where, you know, I didn't just copy and paste a recipe for any of these beers. It was just going through the research and finding the respected brewers who had, like, put literature on the internet and kind of synthesizing my own take on everything that's already out there. As far as, like, you know, we're kind of known in the industry as, or like in our little corner of the industry as kind of like beer lunatics, and like we're doing, you know, weird stuff. And, you know, my philosophy with that has always been, well, learn how to do the base beer properly first. And then, you know, once you've got the base beer that tasting a certain way and you're happy with it, what else works on top of or in conjunction with the flavors of that base beer. And so even our wildest stuff has a good foundation underneath it. And that's the stuff that we advertise a little bit more and we bring to beer festivals and stuff. Like, that reputation is well earned. Like, yeah. We try and be a bit weird about things. But I am pretty happy that 5 of the 6 medals were for traditional styles, because it kind of showcases the other side of our brewery, which is when we want to take a run at something that's very well established, we look at the style guidelines. We taste the beers from the breweries that made those styles famous, and we, you know, we let that inform how the beer is going to go here moving forward.
Well, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
And that's this week's episode of The Scoop, a podcast and broadcast featuring stories from remote BC by the journalists in the communities of Smithers, Cortez Island, Revelstoke, Kootenai, Prince George, and Terrace. This program was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program. Tune in next week for another episode and follow us online wherever you get your podcasts.